Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable Supreme Court of Texas is now in session pursuant to adjournment.
Thank you. Be seated.
Good morning. The court has three matters to be submitted for oral argument this morning. In the order of their presentation, they are as follows. In the interest of SAV and KEV minor children from Potter County, Heldenfels Brothers Incorporated versus City of Corpus Christi from Nueces County, and Henry S. Miller Company versus Douglas Bynum Jr. and others from Harris County. The court will hear each of these three arguments. We will take a brief recess in between the presentation of each argument, and we will complete the submission of these three causes before noon. In each cause, the court has allowed a certain amount of time for petitioner and respondent to present arguments. I believe you all have been advised what that time is. Petitioner may advise the bailiff if counsel wishes to save out some of the allotted time in order to present a rebuttal argument. These arguments are being recorded for the convenience of the court. If you desire to listen to tapes of the arguments, you may make application with the clerk of our court. Counsel in the second and third causes do not have to remain in the courtroom, but please remain nearby so that we may proceed to your matter without delay when it is time for it to be reached. In the first cause, in the interest of SAV and KEV, the court has allotted 20 minutes for each side to present oral argument, and we are ready to hear arguments from petitioner.
May it please the court, Mr. Lovell will present argument for the petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 8 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. My name is Joe Lovell, and I'm here on behalf of Dr. Ripito, who is the mother in this child custody jurisdiction and personal jurisdiction case. What we have is a case of conflicting and concurrent jurisdiction between Texas and Minnesota in a child custody and support modification case. For purposes of oral argument, I intend to focus my argument primarily on the DKPA and UCCJA aspects of the custody and visitation jurisdiction.
Do you agree the jurisdiction is concurrent, though?
Under the UCCJA, yes, Your Honor.
So you agree that Texas and Minnesota each have jurisdiction in the case?
Under the UCCJA, as far as custody and visitation, Texas clearly does.
In this case, does the state of Texas and the state of Minnesota each have jurisdiction?
As to different aspects, yes, Your Honor.
And which aspect does it not have jurisdiction?
Minnesota does not have jurisdiction, it's our position, on custody and visitation. They clearly do have jurisdiction on child support and visitation expenses because that's related to personal jurisdiction, and Minnesota clearly has personal jurisdiction over Dr. Ripito.
Weren't these two statutes passed to prevent the very reason we're here today?
Primarily, yes, Your Honor, that and kidnapping problems, which aren't involved here, but they were passed in order to try to relieve these kind of conflicts.
Seize, run, and litigate.
That's been the phrase used. That's not a situation involved here factually.
I understand.
The original custody decree, at the time that was entered back in 86, it was even provided in there that they expected Dr. Ripito and eventually the children to move somewhere else, which they did. And Dr. Ripito and the children had resided here in Texas for several years before this ever came.
Does the father still reside in Minnesota?
Yes, Your Honor, he does.
Has the Minnesota Court of Appeals decision been appealed, or is it final?
It is final. At the outset, I believe it's important to recognize that we are here in the interest of Sarah and Kate. The best interest does apply to determinations of custody jurisdiction. Texas Family Code and the PKPA. Recognize that the best interest of the children must be taken into consideration. And of course, that duty is placed upon the trial court to act in the best interest and make jurisdictional determinations with that in mind.
What deference should we give to the findings of fact of the Minnesota trial court that it's in the best interest of the children to have these matters litigated in Minnesota?
If, according to the Minnesota Court of Appeals, the reason that it was found that it was in the best interest of the children was because the Minnesota Court of Appeals and the Minnesota Trial Court was given wrong information about the enforceability of Texas orders pending appeal. And the Court of Appeals specifically held that because they interpreted there to be a vacuum of jurisdiction pending the appeal, they would go ahead and cover that vacuum until it was finally resolved here in Texas.
Well, I'm referring specifically to the findings, the order retaining jurisdiction, RE-31, under the findings of fact and conclusions of law, specifically under findings of fact 3, with subparts through A through L, where the Minnesota trial court made findings of fact that it is in the best interest of the children because of the presence of witnesses or residents in Minnesota over a period of time to retain the case there. That's specifically what I'm referring to. What deference should we give to those fact findings?
We should give the deference that the Minnesota Court of Appeals stated that we should give, and that is as far as best interest, and that finding of fact is related to this misunderstanding concerning the enforceability on appeal. The Minnesota Court of Appeals also found that arguably, is what they said, there was some evidence there to support a best interest finding. They also held, however, though, that the Minnesota Trial Court effectively found that Texas was the most convenient forum. Furthermore, the several cases construing these provisions, not only Texas cases, but also cases throughout the states, have held that from a best interest standpoint, home state has a priority. And that's also provided for in the Texas UCCJA and the PTAPA.
Why do we need to get into this? If Minnesota has jurisdiction but has declined to exercise it, then Texas should go ahead with its proceeding. Isn't that true?
Yes, sir.
Hasn't the Minnesota Court of Appeals found that the Minnesota courts have declined to exercise jurisdiction?
That's what?
Why shouldn't we defer to that decision?
Because under the PKPA and also under the Texas Family Code, that's part and parcel of modification jurisdiction if the original decree was issued in another state. It's whether or not that court has declined to exercise or under the state statute declined to assume jurisdiction.
And the Minnesota Court of Appeals says it has.
Effectively, yes, sir. We've got, admittedly, we've got a very unusual Minnesota trial court order.
Why shouldn't we take them at their word? Why shouldn't we take the Minnesota Court of Appeals at its word?
Well, that's the underlying premise under the UCCJA to help resolve these things is communication. Lack of that communication difference that created part of the problem we have here.
Has Minnesota declined? I have a question about that.
It's our position they have.
Is there any case law in Minnesota that would interpret the language that was used by the court that would support your position?
I can't cite you a case involving a situation like that.
Counsel?
Yes.
The children have been in Texas for over 3 years now, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
They've been in Texas for over 3 years. So Texas under PKBA clearly has home state jurisdiction. That's where the children are. If I recall correctly, the Minnesota Court of Appeals opinion stated that if Texas claimed jurisdiction, that it would decline their jurisdiction. In other words, basically the tone of their opinion was, we don't want there to be a void. We're going to go ahead and deal with this as if we have jurisdiction, but if Texas wants it, we don't have it.
That's correct.
Under PKPA B, I, it states that if it appears that no other state has jurisdiction as a home state, and it's in the best interest of the child, under subsection G, court shall not exercise jurisdiction during the pendency of proceeding in a court of another state where the other court is deciding custody. Clearly divests Minnesota jurisdiction, does it not?
We believe it does, Your Honor.
Texas is a home state. It has jurisdiction because of that. Minnesota does not have jurisdiction as the home state. The only thing they can claim is they were the site of the divorce and that the father still lives there.
That's correct.
They do not have home state jurisdiction. Texas clearly does. The Texas proceeding was pending when the Minnesota proceeding was filed. It was first filed here.
That's correct.
And it related to custody.
That's correct.
Minnesota should decline jurisdiction on that basis, shouldn't they?
Yes, Your Honor.
I don't know that there's a problem. We have jurisdiction under Texas law. We have jurisdiction under federal law. The Minnesota court has said if Texas claims jurisdiction, we will decline it. We are not going to exercise it. If they have it and exercise it, Texas is exercising.
I couldn't have said it better myself, Your Honor. That's precisely our position. Now, the position, incidentally, before I forget, that very analysis.
Now they claim the best interest of the children. It's very difficult. It's a long stretch when the children have been in Texas for over 3 years.
That's correct, and there have been several courts that have analyzed it precisely as you just have, specifically the court's benefit, the Hemp versus Cape case, Pima County juvenile action, and EEB versus DA, and also a more recently cited case, custody of Brandon out of Massachusetts. All of those cases have been cited in our brief, and the last case was cited in supplemental authorities. The problem comes in from the father saying that Texas never had jurisdiction to begin with because Minnesota didn't come out beforehand and very explicitly and in so many words say, we decline any further custody jurisdiction.
Do the statutes of either state or the federal government require that?
No, Your Honor, they don't. The way
they have jurisdiction when those children are within the borders of our state.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
Don't we have jurisdiction over those children when those children are within the borders of our state?
Absolutely.
It's their custody and their best interest?
Absolutely. And that's precisely what Judge Emerson ruled. The whole premise underlying Dr. Vigiano, the father's case, is, like I said, this premise that there has to be an affirmative, explicit, in so many words, declination of jurisdiction before anybody else can do anything.
I can understand why the Minnesota court wrote the way they did. They did not want there to be a void. They did not want those children to be hanging somewhere in a legal limbo. They said, we're going to exercise jurisdiction, but if Texas claims it, we will decline it. We will not exercise it. In the meantime, we're not going to allow this thing just to hang in space.
That's correct.
And we've exercised it.
And with that Minnesota Court of Appeals opinion, that makes this case different from all the cases cited, and it makes it fall right into the PKPA F2, which is a declination of jurisdiction.
Counsel, what could this court possibly write in this case that will prevent similar litigation in the future?
One thing this court could write is regarding the requirement under the UCCJA for the second-in-time court to stay its proceeding and call the first-in-time court. That's a key problem here. The PKPA, while it does preempt state law, it only preempts state law in conflict with the PKPA.
You want us to engraft the requirement that one court calls the other court and works out who's going to go forward?
You don't have to engraft it, Your Honor. It's already built into the statute. Not only the Texas statute, but the Minnesota statute.
That didn't happen here, though, did it?
That's correct. And the Minnesota Court of Appeals found that the trial court in Minnesota was in error for not doing that.
But where both courts go forward and insist on litigating the case, is there anything we could possibly write that will ever prevent this similar type of litigation in the future?
You can write that in the event the second-in-time court doesn't follow the procedure laid out in the UCCJA, which is not in conflict with PKPA, that amounts to a declination of jurisdiction or it takes jurisdiction from the second-in-time court. So for these reasons,
any other questions?
Yes, Your Honor.
Doesn't jurisdiction continue in the father's home state, even though the children have moved down here? Under their law, don't they have continuing jurisdiction?
Absent what else has happened, yes, Your Honor, because he still resides there.
And doesn't the PKPA provide that the jurisdiction continues as long as he resides in that state? and he has continuing visitation rights with his children.
Yes, sir. But that doesn't conflict with what's happened here, because the PKPA also provides for modification jurisdiction of another state in certain events such as we have here.
Could it be argued that what the Court of Appeals did in the father's home state was simply behave as the court should have done?
I'm sorry, I didn't follow you.
Well, instead of having a battle between the two courts, the court in the father's home state under, I think it was paragraph 4, simply said if Texas insists on going forward, we will relinquish it.
That's what the trial court is for. We respectfully pray that this court affirm the trial court.
Thank you, counsel. You have 8 minutes remaining. The court is now ready to hear argument from respondents.
May it please the court, Mr. Sampson and Mr. Walker will present arguments for the respondents. Mr. Sampson will open.
May it please the court, I'm speaking in response only to petitioner's writ. There's a good decision, and I recognize that the question is very complex, but it isn't really close given the Parental Kidnapping Prevention Act. That is, Congress has acted exactly twice in the history of this country in the Full Faith and Credit Clause. Once in 1790 and once in 1980 when they passed the Parental Kidnapping Prevention Act. Now that act was not dealt with in the trial court. We have a shoot first and try to pick up the pieces later kind of action in Amarillo. Amarillo went ahead, the Amarillo trial court went ahead and modified custody in a very typical and unremarkable case. That is, a very substantial number of divorce cases are going to wind up with one or both parents out of the original state. And the UCCJA, as we'll see, doesn't handle that situation very well. In this case, after a long battle, after some modifications, one of the parents left, perfectly legitimate, left and came to Texas. After 6 months passes, she goes into the local court to modify, to cut down the father's visitation rights and to take away his joint custody.
Mr. Sampson, there wasn't anything pending in Minnesota, was there, when that suit was filed?
No, these parties had their rights by virtue of the Minnesota decree, and that Minnesota decree continues and the jurisdiction of that court continues. That's the first action. And it continues. It remains the first action. It's always the first action. No subsequent action can become a first action because these parties divorced and took their rights from that Minnesota decree.
Excuse me, counsel. Factually speaking,
yes.
After the mother moved to Texas, didn't the father go into the Minnesota court and get a modification of his expenses provisions as far as child visitation is concerned so that he could credit his travel expenses to see the children against his child support obligation, which effectively resulted in the children getting zilch for child support?
Oh, with regard to the subsequent modifications, that action began after the Texas modification actions began. There's two perspectives here to look at, and the policy arguments can come down on one side or the other. If from one perspective, this is just judicial child snatching. That is, the parties have a custody arrangement that they have worked out, and then one party unilaterally moves someplace else, 6 months passes, and goes in and changes custody. And instead of the old way where the non-custodian would snatch off the child, this way the custodian gets to cut down the visitation rights and so forth of the stay-at-home parent. That's one perspective. The other perspective is that correcting Mr. Lovell, the father has never asserted that Texas does not have jurisdiction. Texas is the home state of these children, and Texas has concurrent jurisdiction by our statute and indeed by the federal act. There's concurrent jurisdiction that needs to be resolved. The federal act resolves the conflict, not the states, and I'll see in just a second why that is. But the other perspective on the policy is, the forum that has the most information where the kid lives, where the kids live, is acting to adjust the visitation rights. And both those policies are legitimate policies that one side or the other can argue is the sounder policy. That is, the local court in the home state decides these issues, or the state that from which all of the rights of the parties flow with its continuing jurisdiction decides that issue. Well, the UCCJA has something to say about this, and none of it was dealt with. That is, our state law tells the parties, one, that there is modification jurisdiction, 11.53, but 11.62, 11.63, and 11.64, which are also part of the UCCJA, and which the local courts never get that far in reading the statute, says things like, you recognize, you enforce, and shall not modify the decrees of other states. So that's what the state law says. Now, UCCJ is just a state law, and each state will construe its own law, and all 50 states have it, but Minnesota can't tell Texas, you must recognize and enforce our custody decrees and give our continuing jurisdiction power, just like we wouldn't be able to tell other states that either. So every custody decree in Texas is subject to a six-month divesting when the custodian leaves.
That's 11.53 subparagraph D.
That
Minnesota doesn't have that.
Minnesota does not have it, but that is it with regard to changing custody. So we're talking here about modification. So the urge for hometown decision is great. The policy considerations, home state versus continuing jurisdiction, are kind of mixed. The UCC is somewhat ambiguous because it says you have modification jurisdiction and doesn't. And so what we're left with is 50 state laws that are that are unsatisfactory on this subject.
Why do we need to get into that here when Minnesota has declined jurisdiction?
Justice Heck, Minnesota has not declined.
Well, how do you read the Minnesota
Court
of Appeals?
How
do you read the Minnesota Court of Appeals opinion? Toward the end, Minnesota will continue to decline to exercise jurisdiction it has.
I read it this way. The trial court is asked, do you have continuing jurisdiction? The trial court says, this court has continuing jurisdiction over child custody and visitation. That's a finding, a non-declination of jurisdiction.
The Minnesota Court of Appeals says there's a case called Schmidt in their jurisdiction that says you also have to weigh the convenience to the parties, and the trial court essentially found that it was inconvenient to litigate in Minnesota.
The way I read the appellate court is affirmed. What they say is affirmed, that the trial court says we have continuing jurisdiction, and prospectively, if this court or the Amarillo Court of Appeals ignores the PKPA and, quote, insists on exercising jurisdiction in contravention of the full faith and credit clause.
Where does it say ignores and in contravention of full faith and credit?
Because the trial court, having not a lot of confidence apparently in his decision, said will decline a future declination if the appellate courts in Texas come out in the manner described. Texas insists on exercising jurisdiction. What the appellate court in Minnesota says is affirmed. What it writes in its opinion is one thing, but what it actually does is affirm the trial court's order that says this court has continuing jurisdiction, and it says we will decline it in the future if the Texas appellate courts do something that I've described as ignoring the PKPA. Because here's where we are. When two states have concurrent jurisdiction, the question is how to resolve this conflict. And the PKPA gives a formula, that it's the rendering state that has the continuing jurisdiction. They have to choose between the local forum and the court with continuing jurisdiction.
Counsel,
and Congress can mandate.
we can back up just a minute.
Sure.
The trial court, in its conclusion, Minnesota, in its conclusion law number 4, essentially said that they would decline jurisdiction only if Texas appellate courts found jurisdiction in Texas. Isn't that the gist of it?
No.
The gist of what the Minnesota Court of Appeals affirms, effectively the same thing? Didn't they basically affirm that, too?
I don't believe that that's a problem.
In other words, they didn't want to leave this case and these children, this controversy, hanging out in Never Never Land somewhere between Texas and Minnesota. We're going to go ahead and entertain it. We're going to deal with it. But if Texas insists on exercising jurisdiction, then we decline. Isn't that what they said?
No. No, Your Honor. I don't believe so. What this court, there's no debate that Texas has jurisdiction, that there's concurrent jurisdiction. So it can hardly be...
What you had was two courts that were basically a few hundred miles apart who were waiting to see what the other one was going to do. Well, we're not going to let it hang forever. We're going to go ahead and deal with it. But if the other state wants it, then we'll let them have it.
I think the Amarillo appellate court correctly characterized the trial court's prospective declination of jurisdiction if an appellate court in Texas, rather than the trial court, so ruled. Here's what the PKPA says. It says that the courts have continuing jurisdiction. That's and remember now, this is only the second time this trying to settle this battle, this exact battle that's come up in this case, is only the second time that Congress has used its full faith and credit power. That's how difficult that this issue is. And they say that jurisdiction of court that's made child custody jurisdiction continues. And there was no attempt or effort to determine anything about that. All that the Amarillo trial court did was see that Texas is the home state, absolutely. That Texas has jurisdiction, yes. But to modify, it has jurisdiction to modify only if the PKPA is complied with. And the PKPA comes after the UCCJA, and the reason it comes after is because the UCCJA does not satisfactorily settle these issues. And the only one that can settle it is Congress. Because, as I say, states can't tell one another what to do. But Congress can, and Congress did. Congress said, you have to have a declination. And what we have here, because all the other tests are met, that is, Minnesota has best interest, we would call it significant connections jurisdiction. They call that significant connection jurisdiction for some reason. They call it best interest. That's a finding.
Mr. Sampson, have you and Mr. Walker worked it out with the bailiff?
I'm sorry.
Have you and Mr. Walker worked out with our bailiff?
Yes, we have. I was supposed to get a double flash, and he was going to come up and
stand
behind me when my 15
right.
minutes are up. Because he there's also a writ granted for
right.
petitioner.
I didn't know you had 15 minutes. I'm sorry to interrupt your train of thought.
So the PKPA and Congress, the only one that can tell the states.
If I may ask you another question regarding the PKPA, Mr. Sampson, under BI, a state will exercise jurisdiction if it appears that no other state has jurisdiction such as the home state, and it is in the best interest of the child. Now, it's my understanding that Minnesota's jurisdiction is arguably hinges on, number one, the father is still there, number two, it's a court where the divorce is granted and they have continued jurisdiction per the agreement, and three, and this is, of course, what you're really hanging on, the best interest of the children. The best interest of the children, of course, probably ought to be decided by the forum state, the home state. That's where the kids are. But, also under PKPA subsection BG, the court shall not exercise jurisdiction during the pendency of proceeding in another state, the court of another state, where the other court has decided custody. There was a custody proceeding pending in Texas at the time the Minnesota action was filed.
Justice Gamish, the B section deals with initial cases, the initial establishment, and it gives a home state preference over a significant connection preference when two states can get crosswise. That is, concurrent jurisdiction can occur in the initial finding for custody. One state says we have significant connection, another state's a home state. After there is a determination, which was the case here, then such Section D, the continuing jurisdiction, and Section F apply. That is, there's no home state preference after the initial determination. We have a custody order here. And once that custody order is in place, thereafter you're dealing with modification. And you can't have a pending custody order when there already is one. You can't get first in line when you're second in line. That's what's, to me, the strangest claim here.
Basically, subsection D, though, refers to the state having jurisdiction, number one, pursuant to its own laws, and it remains the residence of the child or one of the contestants. That's all subsection D says. And the father's still there. Yeah. Which takes precedence?
The continuing jurisdiction, you know, I have cited.
Children have been here 3 years and Minnesota has continued jurisdiction.
That's correct.
Custody.
Just like we do. Our cases say that our custody decrees have continuing jurisdiction too. I have cited in my brief any number of scholarly authorities that give the PKPA exactly the construction that I have put before this court. There is not one word in any law journal or any scholarly writing whatsoever to support the idea that modifications are subject to anything other than what I said.
Do you have any cases?
Yes, indeed. Indeed, the case that I got last Saturday in the certified mail, the Brandon case, which petitioner cites, he doesn't cite, the important parts of the case, such as, it's exactly the same kind of thing, Mississippi and Massachusetts in this instance. And Massachusetts and Texas have a connection because we were the last two states to enact the UCCJA. Senator Mousey, 1983, sponsored the UCCJA here, and then Massachusetts came after us, all after then the PKPA being enacted. The Massachusetts court said, we note that Mississippi may enjoy jurisdiction over this case under the PKPA in its footnote. They recessed the case and sent it back to determine whether there had been compliance with the PKPA. 2 months later, that same Massachusetts court, in a case called Archibald, which I will provide to the court, found that any conflict with the PKPA preempted state law. And the Brandon case is relevant. Petitioner cited it, and I would cite it too, because it finds that the PKPA very well can be in conflict. Indeed, all of the scholarly writings say exactly
Where's
that.
Where's the conflict in this case?
The conflict is that there are two states with concurrent jurisdiction, and one of them has found that our continuing jurisdiction is continuing, which was affirmed, while on the other hand, we have... It was a prospective qualification. Now, I'm not here to say that...
We can resolve that in this court. Here.
I'm not here... No. That's exactly what would be wrong.
That's what they said they wanted somebody to do.
They should decide. Once one state starts saying you don't have jurisdiction, chaos is back. You have to leave it to each state to say, we decline, rather than have someone come along and say, well, we don't want them to have jurisdiction. Then we're back to the season run part.
Pardon me, didn't they say if Texas insists on exercising jurisdiction, we don't have it?
But we can only insist on having jurisdiction by disregarding the PKPA. By disregarding the full faith and credit and sanctioning...
Excuse me, what provisions of the PKPA must we disregard?
We have to disregard Section F and Section D and Section C1. Because that's what the trial court did. This is an after-the-fact, pick-up-the-pieces kind of thing, not a considered judgment in the first place.
And what is the public policy argument that you say underlies your position? What chaos will result if you don't?
There are two competing policies. local court with the child there versus the continuing jurisdiction of the court that gave the rights to the individual. And each state can and did make their own choice as to those competing elements until Congress came along, finding that that was an unsatisfactory method, and selected the continuing jurisdiction as the way to resolve these issues. And that, and by putting the Section D in and the Section F in, and I want to hasten to add that that is the construction that every secondary source, including the publication by the Office of Child Support Enforcement and the ABA combined to write it, and cited in my brief at length, combined to write document to explain to the bench and bar exactly how the modification jurisdiction is supposed to work under the PKPA.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thanks. Walker, you have 5 minutes.
5 minutes, Ronnie.
Yes.
Thank you. May it please the court, I'm Ronnie Walker, and I'm going to speak only on the issue of whether or not whether or not Dr. Vigiano waived in personam jurisdiction by the form of a special appearance. This is not the most comfortable position to be in. I was a trial attorney, and I have filed numerous special appearances. And every time I do one, and I even did one after this one, I have the same quandary. How can you get the real issue before the court on a preliminary basis without worrying about violating Rule 128? Even if you just do a skeleton 128 special appearance, you still have to put on the evidence. And then, as they pointed out in their brief, that may waive the in personam jurisdiction. You have to interrogate witnesses. That may waive in personam jurisdiction. Y'all have referred to the Minnesota Court of Appeals and bring concern about how Texas court is ruling on these issues. They are apparently confused about our Rule 128. The Minnesota Court of Appeals, in a footnote in their most recent in their opinion that we refer to, basically states that under all circumstances, Minnesota will have jurisdiction over child support and visitation expenses. And the court's confused how it could have been waived in Texas. The Perry v. Ponder Court, the Dallas Court of Appeals, they apparently had several cases like this. I mean, this is the third one in 1980. They seem to say there's no reason why 128 cannot be used to litigate subject matter jurisdiction issues as well. The key is to construe any subject matter allegations as alternative allegations. In my case, the Emerald Court of Appeals in its modification judgment erroneously stated that the initial challenge in the special appearance was to the subject matter jurisdiction. That's just simply not true. The introduction is only in persona. The first three articles are only in persona. There's no special language for alternative pleadings. I believe the Perry v. Ponder Court is also saying you don't have to have the alternative pleading in your answer.
Did the trial court hear the special appearance?
Your Honor, the trial court heard the special appearance, and we were very careful to keep the issue only to jurisdictional issues.
Personal jurisdiction.
Essentially personal jurisdiction issues. But the trial court, when it made its ruling without me offering or being able to guide it, say, would you rule this on in personam issue first? It made an oral recitation and then it did its own written opinions. I think it obviously never occurred to the trial court anything of this. It never occurred to anyone until the appeal came up, and then a little research seemed to indicate, hey, perhaps there's a waiver here because of reform. In a suspecting parent-child relationship, it's very difficult to isolate those issues. It's not almost impossible, no matter how you do it. Most trial judges want you to have a rather involved pleading for special appearance as well.
But even if there's no waiver, why hasn't he submitted to the jurisdiction of Texas? Personal jurisdiction.
Well, the reason he has not submitted is because he believes that Minnesota is the appropriate place for that issue.
And well, but he's been down here.
Well, he's been down there only for visitation. He had joint custody, and the record shows that in a year and a half, instead of 3 years, I believe, that they were in Texas. But he's visited Texas 173 days. He had them all during the summer and all during the holidays. She had them during the school year. Judge Dickerson changed that entirely. He also changed the joint management service to sole management service.
What, in your view, would it take for Texas to gain in personam jurisdiction over a parent that lives in another state?
Well, first of all, I think I realize there's concurrent jurisdiction. I think Texas ought to be cognizant of what's going on in Minnesota and what happened previously. I think if Dr. Vigiano had established personal contacts in Texas other than through visitation.
Is he still looking for a job here?
Well, that's really distorted. There's a voluminous record, but depositions were taken of these anesthesiologists where he supposedly looked for a job, and I mean, there's no evidence. I know it's very hard to say there's no evidence. There's no evidence to support that. The Minnesota decree was an end product of a lot of negotiation, and throughout the Minnesota decree, it says the parties agreed jurisdiction will stay in Minnesota. It acknowledges that she's getting ready to leave. She was going to go to Kansas City, didn't know where she would ultimately end up. And it just seems totally unfair, and of course, particularly unfair to argue that there's any personam jurisdiction based on some procedural glitch. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
What personal jurisdiction is there over the father, other than he visited here and was looking for a job?
Personal jurisdiction on not only for the waiver of special appearance, but also under minimum contacts analysis, which ultimately goes to fairness of hailing somebody into a court of this state.
What are the contacts besides visitation and looking for a job? Is that it?
Categorized, that's about it. If you get into the amount of time, it becomes, particularly in a context like this, becomes enormous.
Do you agree that visitation is not, that doesn't count, or do you think it does count?
I believe it does count, Sean. Just briefly on the personal jurisdiction matter, it's Mr. Walker raised the question, how is it that trial lawyers are supposed to put the jurisdictional issues before the court in an early manner without waiving their special appearance? And it's very simple. Our procedures already provide for that. You have a special appearance. Special appearance is strictly construed and it's limited to personal jurisdiction, amenability to service of process. If you also have subject matter jurisdiction matters to raise, you raise them in an alternative pleading. Here, that's not what happened. Very clearly, the thrust of the special appearance was subject matter jurisdiction. Subject matter jurisdiction was decided before personal jurisdiction, and under the cases and the statutes and rules cited, it very clearly amounted to a waiver of the special appearance.
Counsel says he can't control the order the trial judge rules.
Yes, he could. He can't, may not be able to control the order the trial judge does rule, but he's capable of preserving any objection to that. And in this case, it went beyond that because any special appearance, as you can see from the record, the thrust of the special appearance, not only the hearing, but the separate special appearance document was very specifically subject matter jurisdiction. And that's borne out throughout the record. The evidence that was put on was subject matter jurisdiction. After the ruling on the special appearance, Dr. Vigiano attempted to bring a writ of mandamus and specifically asked that trial court be held in error for failing to decide subject matter jurisdiction in his favor. So very clearly it was waived. Moving on to the PKPA. Somebody, somewhere, sooner or later, has got to be ready to exercise jurisdiction in the best interest of the children. Now under the scenario posed by Dr. Vigiano, we run into a problem there because and the very problem we've run into here. Nobody's really wanting to go out and assert jurisdiction, holding back. And
counsel,
that created
counsel, this vacuum you're talking about, she called him one night and told him what she was going to do, so he ran down to the courthouse the next day. I mean, there really wasn't much of a vacuum, simply the difference between one evening and the next morning.
From a time standpoint, that's correct. From whether or not anybody was exercising, or whether Minnesota, in this case, was exercising jurisdiction over custody and visitation, there was. because the first indication throughout that entire time that Minnesota was even claiming to assert any kind of jurisdiction over custody and visitation occurred over a year later, a few weeks before an oral argument in the Court of Appeals. And then it was conditional. The PKPA doesn't reach as broadly as Professor Sampson would like it to reach. The PKPA does not establish a cause of action. It does not establish jurisdiction in federal courts for its construction. It establishes guidelines to attempt to avoid these kind of problems, but it only preempts state law where it conflicts with state law. And the state law, UCCJA, provides the procedure for resolving these very types of problems. And that procedure is that second-in-time court, in this case Minnesota, is to state its proceeding and call the first-in-time court, or communicate in some manner, so that that matter can be resolved up front and quickly. And that the court, the Minnesota court, did not do in this case. The Texas trial court then went on and asserted jurisdiction in the best interest of the children. Dr. Vigiano would have, is in effect asking this court to entirely disregard the best interest of the children in order that jurisdictional determinations can be quick and easy.
Counsel, let me ask you on the best interest of the children. The section in Texas under our family code is 11.53D, and Minnesota, under their domestic relations statute, it is 518A.03. That's their corresponding section, which deals with best interest of the child. Can you address the Minnesota statute as to why it's not in the best interest of the children to have jurisdiction in Minnesota? Because that's their corresponding statute to ours.
I'm not sure I really understand. You said 11.53D?
11.53D talks about jurisdiction, okay? They have a corresponding section very similar to ours, which is 518A.03. And are you familiar enough with it to address why they would not acquire jurisdiction under that statute?
Because of home state preference. The Minnesota statute, unlike the Texas statute and the PKPA, does not have the overriding home state preference. In Texas, it goes so far as the addition of 11.53D, which is not contained in the Minnesota statute, where Texas even requires that its court decline jurisdiction if another state has attained home state status.
Under the Minnesota statute, subparagraph A deals with home state, but then it says semicolon R, and then in subparagraph B it says it is in the best interest of the child, and it continues on with the significant connections test. But it does address home state, but then it goes on with the second paragraph, which is subparagraph B.
That's correct. And in Minnesota, the four UCCJA foundations for jurisdiction are all alternative, including home state. Under the PKPA, the Texas version of the UCCJA, first, if there's home state, that's where it goes. Only if there's no home state, then we get into the other three, that basically the significant connection, emergency, and the vacuum jurisdiction aspects. And that's the big distinction between PKPA in this area, between PKPA, Texas UCCJA, and Minnesota UCCJA.
There are three tests. If you pass the home state very quickly, are the child and at least one of the parents, well, we're out of time now. I think I understand your answer. Thank you.
Any other questions? This court from the trial court.
Thank you, counsel. That completes the argument in the first cause. The court will take a brief recess.